Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Supernatural News here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Right over there is the BCB, the Big Cuddly Bear, Beer City Bruiser. How you doing, Bruiser?
I'm doing fantastic, Tim. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. We have an extensive show here, my friend. It's one of those things we're going to have to jump right in. I thought, you know, putting together today's show that I didn't think there was much out there. Then I start putting it together, and holy smokes, did stuff happen over the past week.
It's coming out of the woodwork, huh?
Oh, yeah. They're coming out of everywhere, so to speak. Lots of wild and woolly stories, lots of supernatural happenings, and lots of stuff across the board. You know, the one thing I do have to thank our audience for is they're sending stories in left and right.
Awesome.
Which we got to thank them for that.
Thank you.
The other thing, we never admonish our audience. We never say shame on you for anything. But the one thing that we do wish you do is send us a few more of your supernatural experiences. We do want
to
hear.
Yes, we love to hear about that and weigh in on it.
Yeah, we want to hear more of your stuff. I mean, we could talk about our stuff all day long, but we want to hear about your stuff. So supernatural, anything. Have you had a ghost experience? Have you had an experience with Bigfoot? Have you, has a witch goosed you? I don't know. Stuff like that. Now I'm going to get witch goosing stories all week next week.
You are.
As a matter of fact.
Some guy's going to email you and say his butt's bruised from that witch just constantly goosing him.
Well, that'll happen. So it's easy to do. Tim@darknessradio.com. Just send me something that says Parashare in the header. And, let's get some stories going. We want to find out what kind of experience you've had. So we'll put it on the Parashare deal here. I'm having troubles getting a Google number for you guys to call into. But we'll get that hammered out here in the next couple of weeks because we want people to hear your lovely voices as well. So we'll do that. I got hiccups and stuff today too. Again, Bruiser, I got to get to a doctor. People are telling me that hiccups could be like a sign of really bad issues.
It could be. Yeah. There was a guy who had hiccups for like 8 years one time I read. Well, can you imagine that every day for 8 years? It's terrible.
So I end up sipping on stuff so that I can slow down the hiccups, but yeah, I there you go. That's all I got to say about that. Let's start with our first story, shall we?
Yes, please.
NASA says it's embarking on a risky mission to investigate UAPs. Did we cover this last week?
I think we did. This sounds familiar because we were making fun of NASA.
Yeah, all right. Well, you know what? Let's throw that one out. We'll just remind you that NASA's getting risky with the UAPs. Canada's going to share UFO info with the U.S. Did we go over that one?
No, that one's new. So I'm expecting a very polite story because it's Canadian.
Yes. Well, it's polite information, too.
Okay.
Yeah. They're just going to go, they're going to sit us down over some Timmy Hortons.
And some poutine.
And some poutine. And we're going to share a cup of coffee, you know, and maybe some Molson. And we're going to go over the files. Interestingly enough, I'm trying to get a hold of John McLaughlin over at, I think that's our buddy's name, over there at the Black Vault. And I'm trying to book him for another shot on the show here.
That would be great. His website is amazing. Ever since I visit it daily now because of you. Because you told me about it on the show. And it's the stuff he gets is amazing.
It is. He has his own podcast over there at theblackvault.com that you can listen to as well. But I want to get him back on because since disclosure, the soft disclosure has happened, he keeps getting more and more stuff. And it's not just, keep in mind, he doesn't just get UFO and UAP stuff. He also has FBI files on, you know, different singers and pop stars and even stuff from the 30s, 40s, and 50s on politicians and the Red Scare. And I mean, he's just got some amazing stuff. J. Edgar Hoover was very busy, put it that way.
He was very busy and doing more than just the FBI stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that John has gotten a hold of. And so I wanted to get a hold of him, see if we could get him on the show and talk a little bit more about what it is he's discovered. But one of the things, he told a story the last time he was with us, which was intriguing, in that when he was trying to find more American files on UAP, UFO, and aliens, he discovered, it's kind of funny, it's literally a backdoor. what the government did is they were tired of people sending in Freedom of Information Acts, right?
Okay.
To get this information on UFO, right?
Right.
And John tries every trick in the book to try and get them in different phrases and different keywords. Well, for lack of wordage here, keywords. Okay.
Okay.
To try and get those Freedom of Information Act documents. So they got tired of trying to hide this from him. So what they, not just him, but other people, there's a group, yeah, a large group out there that try to get these documents. So what they did as far as UFO stuff was concerned was they had a storage facility in upstate New York that they were hiding these documents in.
Okay.
So they took it across Niagara and put it on the Canadian side.
Oh, so there's no Freedom of Knowledge or whatever act up there, so they can hide it.
They can hide it. So you can't submit for it because it's not legally available. It's not in our country, right?
Yeah, it's now international.
And I don't remember what John said. He found out from somebody that these files were available. And he said, well, what do I got to do to get them? Because he's thinking, man, I got to jump through hoops to get these things out of another country. He goes, well, I'll give you a number, and you're going to have a Visa card ready. And he's thinking, oh, I'm going to have to bribe somebody. And he's like, no, you just have to pay postage.
See, the Canadians, they're super nice.
Yeah, and he said,
American secrets, eh? Here you go.
And he said, seriously? He said, yeah, you just have to pay postage. He said, okay. So he calls over there. And the way John tells the story is hysterical because it's just a lone guy on the phone over there in Canada. And he answers the phone and he goes, hey there, hi, how you doing? He goes, oh, pretty good. He goes, so I'm looking for a particular set of files. He goes, oh, yeah, about what? And he said, UFOs and aliens. Oh, yeah, we got a bunch of them. They were just delivered, a couple weeks ago. He said, yeah, I'm wondering if I can get copies of those files. He goes, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, what are you looking for? How many? He goes, well, I'm looking
for... How many? Who am I sending them to?
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. Where am I sending them to? He gives him the address. He goes, oh, that's great. He goes, you got a credit card number? We'll go ahead and we'll send them out right away to you. And John said it was the easiest set of files he ever got his hands on.
Because it's coming from the Canadians.
Yeah, they're just so friendly.
Canadians are nice people.
They're just like, oh, yeah, whatever you want. We'll send them over.
Yep.
Sure. Yeah.
It's just American secrets. That's all it is.
Yeah. And maybe sometime we'll get together for a beer. Okay. Sure.
Okay, Canadian guy. Thanks.
So Canadian government officials are asking their U.S. counterparts about UFOs and nuclear security. The Canadian government officials have agreed to share information about UFOs with the U.S. Those contacts were revealed in a pair of letters posted online this week from Canada's Natural Resources Department and the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, which is a federal regulator. Given the shared priority for nuclear safety and the security of nuclear facilities, and the growing interest in UAPs in both Canada and the United States, the CNSC is committed to raising the issue with its United States counterpart and sharing any related information going forward. This was according to Deputy Minister of Natural Resources John Hannaford in a letter dated June 6th. We have reached out to counterparts in the United States Department of Energy regarding the Office of the Director of National Intelligence's preliminary report on UAPs to learn more about its perspective in order to help inform analysis and action in Canada. The letters were a response to questions Manitoba Member of Parliament Larry McGuire raised in parliamentary committee meetings earlier this year about Canadian nuclear security and U.S. efforts to investigate United Aerial Phenomena. That's this button right here.
Phenomena.
See, I still have that button. An official term for what are more commonly known as unidentified flying objects or UFOs. I asked these questions at the Natural Resources Committee to get the wheels of government turning, the conservative lawmaker said in a statement to Vice News. Congress is taking this issue seriously, and so should our government. In June of 2021, the U.S. Office of the Director of National Intelligence released an unclassified report on recent U.S. military sightings, which have included UAP that appeared to remain stationary in winds aloft. This is a quote, by the way. Move against the wind, maneuver abruptly, or move at considerable speed without discernible means of propulsion. The U.S. Department of Energy has long been suspected of playing a role in the government's UFO-related activities. On May 17th, during the first public congressional hearing on UFOs in more than 50 years, the intelligence official who oversees the Pentagon's current UAP office listed the Department of Energy as a collaborating partner. McGuire, who represents Brandon Soros in southwestern Manitoba, broke a longstanding silence on UFOs in Canadian Parliament during a March 2nd meeting of the Standing Committee on Natural Resources. Fellow conservative politicians Carrie Lynn Findley and Raquel Doncho, as well as Matthew Green from the left-wing NDP, have since joined McGuire in calling on Ottawa to pay attention to UAP developments in the U.S. So there they go. They're now in lockstep and wanting information from the U.S.
And we should give it to them. I mean, if we can work together, because if the aliens do come and they're a threat, we're going to have to rely on the whole world to fight back, not just America.
Not just America. That's for sure. Yeah, you're right.
I'm a little worried that they get our nuclear stuff too, because like, what if it's just you call the guy up and go, yeah, I'm looking for the nuclear codes for this state. Oh, yeah, okay. Got a visa?
Got a visa? MasterCard? We'll take American Express, but, you know, we're no diners club. We're
Nope. No Discover.
We got burned on Diners Club. Meanwhile, China says it may have received some signals from aliens. This came up this past week. Scientists have yet to rule out, actually, they have not ruled out human radio interference, but there are some scientists that are saying now they think it is human interference.
Okay.
China's claiming that its enormous Sky Eye telescope may have picked up trace signals from a distant alien civilization, according to a recent posted and subsequently deleted report by Chinese scientists. Astronomers at Beijing Normal University. Do they have a Beijing Extraordinary University?
It's actually called Beijing Oddball University.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They don't do extraordinary. They do oddball.
I see. They've discovered several cases of possible technological traces in extraterrestrial civilizations form outside the Earth, according to a report published on June 14th in Science and Technology Daily, the official newspaper of China's Ministry of Science and Technology. If you ever do get a subscription to that, check out the funnies. They're great.
They're hilarious. Huh?
Yeah, they have the old Garfield cartoons that Jim Davis did.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the ones before Normal. It's just Garfield and Odie.
Oh, okay. You know, okay.
They're great.
You'd think they'd have Normal because they named the college after him.
Well, that's Normal, not Normal. Right, right. The signals were picked up by China's 500-meter aperture spherical radio telescope, or FAST.
That is a great name for a telescope.
Isn't it, though?
You might have a great telescope, but we have a FAST telescope.
That's right. They're coming up with Furious, which is the son of FAST, and it's going to be...
And then Vin Diesel's going to run the whole program?
Yes, it's going to be christened by Vin Diesel. It was nicknamed Sky Eye, which I don't know why. That sounds like a weather outfit, doesn't it?
Yes. Tune it sounds in. Like a bunch of meteorologists got together and go, hey, what do we need to call this? Hey, let's call it Sky Eye.
Get the latest weather from Sky Eye coming up at 6 and 10.
It sounds like a guy flying around a helicopter, too. Like, okay, we're up here, and it's cloudy, and you're going to have some partly sunny clouds.
Oh, shit, lightning strike. and that's the end of Sky Eye. So Sky Eye, which is the largest radio telescope in the world, was put to work scanning deep space for radio signals that could indicate extraterrestrial life in 2019. Sifting through that data in 2020, the researchers also say they spotted two suspicious narrowband, potentially artificial radio signals. Then in 2022, a targeted survey of known exoplanets found another strange narrowband radio signal, bringing the tally up to three, as the signals are narrowband radio waves typically only used by human aircraft and satellites. They could have been produced by alien technology. However, the scientists say their findings are preliminary and should be taken with caution until the analysis is complete. Now, there was a news story that came out about a day or two ago saying that scientists now believe that those were human transmissions. So is it
One group is shooting the radio signals one way and they just kind of cross the streams? Is that what they're thinking happened?
Yeah, they're thinking that it was a previous radio signal that was sent out from another group here on Earth that China intercepted. And
Yeah. They need to follow the Ghostbusters rules and not cross the streams.
Exactly. You got it. Yeah. There you go. meanwhile, as we turn our heads to yet another story, experts are suggesting that alien civilizations keep collapsing before they can reach us. That's why they haven't come to Earth.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a giant Oregon Trail for them, and they're just dropping off left and right?
And they keep getting dysentery. Yes, Bruiser, you're right. Yeah.
They couldn't ford the river, so that's it. Lost them.
That's it. According to one theory, alien civilizations may be subject to the same processes that stifle the growth of human civilizations as well. In the 1950s, Italian physicist Enrico Fermi argued that it would take aliens a few tens of millions of years to populate the galaxy, yet the lack of close encounters between humans and aliens led him to ask, where are they? The thought process later became known as the Fermi paradox, and has left many scientists and experts scratching their heads as to why humans are yet to cross paths. But two astrobiologists have attempted to answer the question with a new theory, and the reason might lead us to wonder exactly how intelligent and technologically advanced our alien counterparts are. According to a recent paper published in the Proceedings of the Royal Society by Dr. Michael Wong of the Carnegie Institution for Science and Dr. Stuart Bartlett from California Institute of Technology, alien civilizations may be prevented from advancing due to similar reasons that stifle the development of human civilizations. Just like humans, the scientists argue that alien civilizations that grow and expand rapidly likewise collapse just as fast, thus preventing these civilizations from ever reaching the levels of advancement required to develop the technological capabilities of exploring beyond their boundaries. Many human civilizations in the past have repeatedly undergone this process, including the Roman Empire and the ancient Egyptians. And the two professors behind the paper say alien civilizations are no exceptions. Known in the academic world as the theory of superlinear scaling, this theory might explain why in a universe of trillions upon trillions of planets, which is potentially full of life, we are yet to come across any extraterrestrials. Wong and Bartlett, that sounds like a great wine cooler, doesn't it?
It does.
Come enjoy.
That was a wine cooler, wasn't it?
Yeah. Come enjoy a cool, refreshing Wong and Bartlett. I can't even get that one out of my mouth. That's what she said. Wong and Bartlett state that the unbounded growth of civilizations lead to an infinite population and hence infinite demand on resources in a finite time. They say if such a singularity is approached unchecked, the system will eventually exceed its energy supply and collapse or significantly regress. The scientists also suggest that the aliens may be conscious of this process and therefore work to transcend an unbounded growth to avoid total collapse, opting instead for a quiet existence without dreams of intergalactic expansion. Of course, another possibility is that aliens do have the ability to make contact with us, but quite frankly, don't consider us worth bothering with.
Then how do they explain all the UAPs that we've been getting?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
You know what I mean? Because, like, they're visiting us, obviously.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's like their Sunday fun day.
Yeah.
You know, gotcha. they just come down and they're like, hey, how you doing? How's everybody been? How's the kids?
We're just checking on you. Going to the beach.
Those dumb scientists just say, hey, we can't come visit you, but here we are. We're just here. We're here for the food.
We're here for the Wong and Bartlett.
Hey, are you have any more of those tasty Wong and Bartlets available? Are they on ice? Just wanted to come and try one.
We tried the White Claw. Didn't care for it. Wong and Bartlett.
It's like drinking yak piss. Let me try something with a Wong and Bartlett. We have it on our planet, too, you know.
It's delicious.
It is delish. Yeah. Have another story here. We'll get to here in a second. I tend to think that the aliens, if they're, I don't think they're dying on the Oregon Trail there.
I don't think so either. I think they're exploring and they just don't want to move their whole civilization here, you know?
Yeah.
Do we want them to move their whole civilization here, you know?
No, because I tend to think they have trailer parks, too. You know? I just tend to think that they're those kind of people, you know?
So when they land, they're going to have, like, a Marlboro hanging out of their mouth wearing a hat that said FBI Federal Boob Inspector with a wife beater and, like, cut-off jorts.
Yep.
Hello there. We're here for your natty lights. Where are your natty lights?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the experience we're getting out of them. So
rubbing his long finger in his belly button.
Yep. Good, look, more lint.
Don't see this here in lint I found.
We all left our trailer park to come here, and I think we should just go back.
I tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, we've got some interesting stories for you. That includes, we're going to go to Egypt, where supposedly we found a tunnel to the underworld.
Ooh.
In a crypt. Yeah, that's one of the things that we'll look at here in the second half of the program. Also, we're going to go to the White House, where some of the ghosts of the White House have been tormenting some of our presidents of the current, past, and present.
Ooh, I've heard some of these stories.
So we'll talk about some of those ghosts that are hanging out. We've got a couple of AI stories this week. We don't mean to torture you with the AI stories, but it turns out that the world's, how should I put this? The world's oldest AI died this week.
Oh.
And I don't know that there's reason to celebrate, Bruiser.
Small victory for us, isn't it?
Well, you would think, but but I'll just put it this way. It isn't something that we should be jumping up and celebrating.
Well, I had a haunted experience I can explain, talk about after the break.
Do you?
Uh-huh.
All right.
In my hotel room this weekend.
Really? All right. Well, we'll talk about Bruiser's haunted experience as well and what he went through this weekend. We'll find out what haunted experience Bruiser had. So that's all coming up here in the second half of Supernatural News. It's a Supernatural News Wednesday right here on Darkness Radio, the best in paranormal podcasting. We'll pick it up in the second half right here on Darkness Radio.
You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We check the calendar and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio on a Wednesday. It's Supernatural News Wednesday. I'm Tim Dennis. That over there, I shouldn't say that over there. That guy over there is Beer City Bruiser. Oh, Bruiser, it's been one of those days.
You're having a day, aren't you?
I'm having a little bit of a day. You had an interesting experience this past weekend. First of all, tell us where you were and what was going on and what kind of experience you had.
So I performed in Kansas City, Kansas, mm-hmm. but my hotel was in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
And I got back to the hotel room about, I want to say it was like 2:30. Mm-hmm. And I took a shower and I laid down to fall asleep because I had a late flight. So I turned the TV on and drifted off to sleep. Well, a couple hours go by and I got to get up, go to the bathroom. I come out and I noticed the lamp were... there's, you know, they have two lamps. You can plug your phone into some, all that. Well, it was turned. It wasn't straight up like it was. It was turned. And I was like, that's weird. So I turned it back and I laid down. And after about 10 minutes, I couldn't fall back asleep. And I heard something shuffling over on the stand again. So I looked over and the light was turning itself.
Ooh.
It was moving. I was like, okay. Like, I get this. So I let it sit there for a little bit and I moved it back. I'm like, mm-hmm. Let's see what happens if we do. You know, maybe I'm tired. You know, maybe that's mm-hmm. what it is because I was sleeping, you know. So I move it back. And next thing you know, I hear a bang from the window where the light's by. I hear a bang and then it rapidly turns again. And I said, okay, if you want the light that way, I'm not going to touch it anymore. If there's something here, please do that bang again. Well, then there was a bang at the door. So I turned and looked and okay. So I walked over and I opened the door. Nobody there, nobody in the hallway.
Hmm.
Like, thank you for that. And I said, I won't touch the light anymore. And I laid back down and the next thing I know, it feels like someone lays next to me in the bed. And I look and I'm like, if you're in the bed with me, you're welcome, but I'd like to get some sleep tonight. And as I drifted off to sleep, I heard that shuffling sound again. I looked, and the light was moving back to where it was. And then when I woke up in the morning, the light was back to where it was supposed to be.
Really?
Yeah. So I was mad because I didn't have anything to record with because I bet I could have got a great EVP session.
Wow.
You know, but like it was just a little thing like that, you know, and I was respectful and everything. It let me sleep for the rest of the night. And then when I left in the morning, I said goodbye. I said thank you for the peaceful night's sleep. Hopefully I'm back and we can talk because I'll bring something so you can talk to me. And I checked out and went home. And I was just like, man, that was awesome.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Now, I got to ask you this. Some people would have said, well, wouldn't you have tried recording with your phone? A lot, or, you know, trying to get an EVP by phone. But a lot of people don't realize how many filters are on your phone and how it's difficult to get an EVP on your phone. Have you tried that in the past when you've been out on the road?
I have, and nothing's ever happened. Okay. And I wanted to record the light moving too, but every time I'd grab my phone, it would stop.
Really?
Yeah. Like it'd already be shifted and stuff. And I don't know. I'm not technologically sound. I don't know how to set up my phone to constantly record while I was sleeping. Because mm-hmm. I was trying to figure it out. And I'm like, well, it's too late because I was in the Midwest. So if it's 2:30, 3 o'clock there, it's 4 o'clock in the morning at my house, and I can't text Mrs. Bruiser and say, how do you do this?
Yeah.
You know, there's a ghost in my room. How do I do this? You know?
Yeah.
So I was just frustrated with myself, you know, and I used to always travel with a recorder in my bag.
Yep.
And now that I'm not on the road full time, it's not on my list of like everyday stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was kicking myself. So I when I go to Philadelphia in 2 weeks, it's on my list. Pack, you know, pack recorder.
Yep.
And then when I got home, I asked my wife if there's a way. She goes, yeah, you can do like a time lapse thing and all this. And she's showing me. I'm like, cool. Now I know, you know, like, yeah. But it was great. And I messaged a promoter and stuff and thanked him, obviously, for having me in. And then said, you know, I don't know if you know, but the hotel you have the guys stay at, Paranormal Experiences. He goes, no, I did know that. That's why I booked you in that hotel. I just didn't tell you.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
So I said, thank you. But next time, please tell me so that way I can bring stuff with me.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I go, because I have a buddy who would love to see all this or hear these if I catch them. And I have a podcast that the fans would love to see it and hear it. He goes, when you come back in August, I'll put you in the same hotel. I said, could you possibly get me in the same room? He's like, I'll try.
Nice.
So, yeah. Yeah, he just knew that I was a big paranormal guy. So he's like, you know, book him here. And all the talent stays there. But there's like local lore around this hotel. And I was like, okay, cool. So.
Wow. So yeah. Do you have an idea of the story behind what happened in your room or no?
So when I got home, like sitting in the airport, I did a little bit of research. Mm-hmm. And it's an older hotel, but it was recently remodeled. Okay. And I guess a lot of travelers and whatnot used to stay in this hotel because it's only, I mean, you could see the airport from my hotel room, mm-hmm. you know, you could glance. And from what I had read is it was a common, before it got upgraded, it was kind of like one of those pay by the hour type hotels. You know what I mean? That travelers used to come in and do what they wanted to do or whatever.
Yep.
I couldn't see any violent history in it, which was okay because not everything has to be violent.
Mm-hmm.
But just reading that and then talking to the promoter, he says that he's had other talent that had stayed there and they'd complain about the lights going on and off, that they need to get their electricity fixed.
Huh.
So it's centered around the lamps, I'm figuring, is what I'm thinking. But
interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to do a little bit more research. I didn't talk to the desk guy because when I checked out, it was a different person. And I asked her, I said, have you heard any weird stuff happen in the room? She's like, I've only started here a week ago. I don't know. I'm like, okay, well, cool. Huh. Didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to scare her because I didn't know how she'd react.
Yeah.
Being there for a week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it was exciting. Like I at first I was kind of pissed off because I wanted to sleep, but then I was like, wait, this is happening. Like this is actually responding to me.
Yeah.
You know that those juices get going and I'm like, all right, yeah. So
yeah, and you get that little rush of adrenaline, and you're like, wait, I don't want this to stop. You know.
And then, like I said, I was kicking myself because of I couldn't record with anything. And we've tried stuff in the past with the iPhone. It just...
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to
get, it is.
Yeah, it's hard to get EVP with an iPhone. You know, and that's, and then the other thing is, oh, how could you fall asleep with all that happening? Well, I mean, obviously you've been performing, so you're tired and you're sore and eventually you just want to collapse and you want to get some rest. So I get that.
What I thought, and it was almost soothing, is when I laid back in bed and I felt something lay next to me, it was soothing. It wasn't like something laid next to me and I felt like I was in trouble. It felt like calm. And I don't know if that was whatever it was, laying down saying, okay, we're going to rest with you, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer, show respect.
Yeah.
And you get respect back, both in life and in the afterlife. And I think because I had talked and if you don't want me to do this, do this, and I stop with the light, because obviously that was the center of what it wanted to do.
Right.
So when it laid next to me, I was like, okay, it's going to let me sleep fine. So...
Well, the least they could have done, that spirit could have given you a back rubber. I mean, you know, could have, you know, if you had an issue with a hip, could have put your hip back in place. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, it could have, there could have been a little tit for tat here, a little.
I was just happy finally getting some sleep. Like you said, I was sore. I was beat up. It was, because I had a long day, you know, up at 3, catch the flight, perform, get to the hotel late.
Yep.
So.
Yeah,
because everyone thinks traveling the world is so glamorous. You see all this stuff. No, you see the airport. You see a rental car or whoever's picking you up's car. You see the arena. You see the car again. You see wherever you go get food, and then you see your hotel.
Yep. It's pretty solitary. There isn't isn't a lot of sightseeing, and there isn't a lot of of fun. No,
nope. So when stuff like this happens, it adds the excitement, and now I didn't fall right back asleep. I was up for a good hour and a half to 2 hours.
Wow.
You know, communicating and trying to get it, you know, waiting for it. Cause it's not like you say it and it happens, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
Just waiting and, you know, so, huh. But always pay attention to your surroundings. I wouldn't have noticed cause the lamp is just a subtle thing that's in every hotel room, you know?
Right. Yep.
But it was a square, or, you know what I mean? Like a long square. And that's how I could tell it was turned because the base was that way.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. That's wow. That's a good story. It's a good story. Yeah.
I told you I'd let you know when stuff happens when I'm doing the underwater needlepoint. And yeah. This was a big one to me. Yeah. This was better than a faucet or anything because this was the light moving and the bangs. So
I think in another week or two, we can stop calling it underwater needlepoint because seems to me there's another faction that's crossed over to the dark side.
Really?
Yeah. So I think eventually we could stop calling it underwater needlepoint.
Okay.
Yeah, because somebody else has fallen in bed with the wrestling world. So you know what? Doesn't matter. Y'all can't complain that we're turning this into a wrestling show because some other show has fallen in bed with wrestling too. So just saying. Yeah, so nitty nitty boo boo. That's all I got to say. It bounced off and look, stuck to you.
For those people that were worried this would be a wrestling podcast, it's totally not. Even though my profession is wrestling, I still have the paranormal thinking.
That's right.
And I caught this experience. And I brought it back and shared it with everybody. I didn't just keep it to myself.
Yeah. Well, and that's all. You do it for a living, man. That's
Yeah. That's how I pay the bill.
Yeah. I don't sit here and talk to you about transmitters and and how boards work and microphones work and microphone diaphragms and all that other stuff.
Well, that's good that the microphone has a diaphragm. Can't get pregnant.
It's true, yeah. Although I've tried many a times. It's lonely in a studio. let's move on, shall we? Speaking of the underworld and scary experiences with ghosts, there's an ancient Egypt breakthrough this past week after a false door was discovered into the underworld.
That's terrible. Why would, the underworld is not a good place.
Well, you would think not, but in ancient Egypt lore, the underworld was supposedly not all that bad.
Is that where you had to cross the river Styx and you pay the ferryman and all that? That's where that all came from, right?
Yeah, you get some gold coins on the eyes, you know.
Yeah.
Researchers discovered a so-called false door inside a tomb believed to be a portal into the Egyptian underworld in a major ancient Egypt breakthrough. The underworld, known as the Duat, was a central tenet of ancient Egyptian life. You know, I'm going to stop right here. Did you watch Moon Knight? Did you watch the miniseries?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And I love it because it has the old Egyptian lore in there.
Yeah. So, you know, when both personalities of Mark Spector are going, you know, they're on the boat and they're going through the fields and they're headed to their, you know, the afterlife.
Yes.
Yeah. That's essentially what they're talking about. The Duat. They're heading into the afterlife. So they're being rewarded. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Vikings Valhalla.
Yeah, exactly. So the Duat was a central tenet of ancient Egyptian life and played a vital role in the way people lived their lives. Egyptians believed that after you died, your spirit passed through Duat in order to reach Osiris, the dead king of the underworld. The practice of building tombs and mummification was, as a result, extremely important to the Egyptians, if not only protected your soul, but offered a chance to store relics to help you on your journey to Duat. Tutankhamun, the boy king, was a perfect example of this, having over 5,000 relics stored in his tomb, including the mummified remains of his prematurely deceased daughters that would, the Egyptians believed, have helped him defeat evil spirits and demons along the way. Earlier this year, a team of Egyptologists led by Ahmad Zikri, I believe that is, discovered a rare Old Kingdom tomb with an exciting door to what believed symbolized the underworld found inside. The find was documented during the Smithsonian Channel's documentary Tomb Hunters, Tomb of the Pyramid Judge, in a standalone clip posted to YouTube titled Fascinating Structure Inside Ancient Tomb false door to the underworld. The Old Kingdom was a dynamic period of ancient Egyptian history dating from around 2649 to 2130 BC. Up until the discovery of the tomb, most of the team's finds had come from much later in Egypt's history. Breaking through into the tomb, on the far wall, a set of perfectly preserved painted inscriptions adorned the wall. One of the researchers said, "Look how beautiful this is. Look how fresh this is, as if the artist just finished it yesterday. Honestly, this is amazing." The inscriptions had a prominent position in the center of the tomb and covered a type of panel called a false door, as the narrator noted, a magical gateway to the afterlife. In order for the soul known as Ba to move on to the afterlife and eventually return, the Egyptians believed a portal was needed that allowed for travel between the two worlds. Alia Ismail, an Egyptologist, told the documentary, "A false door is very important. It was where the Ba could move between the realm. It's the gate to freedom. The doorways discovered were highly decorated to represent the essence of the owner." Miss Ismail continued, it would have the person's titles, name, and image, everything about the person that they could cram in that small space. They would. Mr. Zikri was able to find the identity of the tomb's owner through the various images painted on the door, which showed, I believe this is Pinamos, alongside his wife and children, including a portrait of a daughter clinging to her mother's clothes. So there you go.
That's really cool that all the artwork was so well preserved.
Yeah.
The Egyptians were ahead of their time when it came to preserving stuff. You know, like the mummification process, the tombs and everything. Because you always hear about when they'd always break into these tombs, It looked like it hadn't been touched. I mean, it was dusty or whatever, but like, you know, that's just amazing to be able to do that in that time period.
Most definitely. Most definitely. This next story is interesting in that it has to do with religious purposes, not ghost purposes. But we talk a lot about smudging on this program, and smudging being used to cleanse an area. Right here in Minnesota, St. Paul schools are close to approving a smudging policy.
Okay.
Smudging involves the burning of sage or other herbs. And especially in St. Paul, there's a huge indigenous population that attends school.
Okay.
So sometime before the pandemic, Johnson High School students, St. Paul Johnson High School, were the first to learn about and implement the indigenous practice of smudging within its school. When the students said they wanted to see the act of smudging be allowed throughout the district, St. Paul public school officials heard them. Now they are steps away from approving a policy that would allow smudging in all of its schools. Tawny Hale said, "We use this to purify ourselves and we use this to cleanse the air." Hale is a manager of the Four Sisters Farmers Market, and she said smudging or burning sage, sweet grass, or other herbs is something that indigenous folks may do prior to a ceremony or traditional dances. "When we use our plant medicine, it is really important to us. It's a sacred time that we can reconnect and give thanks to our Creator," Hale said. But smudging can be a daily practice as well, according to St. Paul School's Indian Education Program Supervisor John Bobolink. Smudging is an everyday cultural practice. Some families, individuals start their day with a smudge, Bobolink said. And SPPS is determined to let that be an option for nearly 4% of the indigenous students in its student body. It happens kind of as a given in most schools that have a high number of American Indian children because it is recognized as a way to keep children, or to help children to cope, rather, Lisa Bellinger said. Bellinger, who is an American Indian specialist and lead teacher at SPPS, said smudging has many benefits. Smudging helps to give someone the strength that they need for medical or school testing or school environment, she said. She says, "I've used smudging when I've had disagreements between two students. They've sat down and smudged and be able to clear the air from there." Superintendent Joe Gothard says he's hoping this move will help more students feel seen and at home. "This, in many ways, is a series of different steps we've taken as a district to not only represent, but also truly respect our American Indian partners and community members," Gothard went on to say. "I think it's about time that our school systems recognize that we're here on Indigenous land, and it's important for our young people to be who they are and to be able to practice their way of life, Hill went on to say. The policy is due for its third reading in July. If approved, it could be implemented as soon as the new school year. So something kind of interesting coming out of St. Paul.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's a great idea to do that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Native American lore. In fact, I have a blessed eagle feather that when we bird the sage, you do the smoke over you with the eagle feather,
yep,
and you say your prayer.
Yep.
And I'm a big fan of smudging. I think it's great. You know, I believe in it. I think it works. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And like you said, it keeps the evil spirits away, it blesses everything, but it also cleanses you. And kids need to be cleansed, and that way you can focus on just your schoolwork and get through the day.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to have some sort of ritual in school, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
And it represents a culture that a lot of people forget about. You know, like there's a lot of movements for different cultures and stuff, which is great. But the Indigenous Native people kind of get pushed to the side. I don't want to say they get pushed to the side, mm-hmm, but they're not in the mainstream media as much as everything else. So I think this is great that they're allowing this to happen to represent that community.
Well, here in Minnesota, I mean, even when I was young, the Indigenous cultures were highly taught in Minnesota, and indigenous history was a huge part of our history classes. So it just seems like a natural fit that some sort of representation of smudging should be in school. I mean, at least for, you know, we're largely white in Minnesota too, but you know, you also have how should I put this? You have African American children who have indigenous blood in them that, mm-hmm, that aren't familiar with their heritage when it comes to that as well.
Yeah.
So just to have that there, to be familiarized with it, to know what it is, to be comfortable with it, I don't see anything wrong with that at all. So
yeah, in Wisconsin, we didn't really learn too much about it. We learned just enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, just doing research in different religions and whatnot and my family history and stuff, it's like, okay. And that's how I got to notice it. But now that I'm here in North Carolina, there's a lot of indigenous people here too.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it around. So maybe it can become a national thing. You know, I mean, hope it's getting a lot of eyes up there in Minnesota. Maybe it gets some national traction too. I don't know. I'm not against it. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Our lieutenant governor here is indigenous, so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's well worth it. So, all right, Bruiser, it's that time. We got to start off with the theme. It's time to shake it up a little. Maybe we need a smudge here. It turns out that an AI engineered enzyme eats entire plastic containers. Now you may say, oh, sure, Tim, that's good for the environment. But you don't understand. You get that enzyme on you, it's going to eat through
you.
Right, because clothes are made out of what? Polyester's made out of what? Plastic. And then it just goes right through your skin, down to the bone, and then you're dead! You're dead, Bruiser!
No more human. Enzyme ate you.
Ugh. People.
And there's no trace of you.
This is like the debate we have about growing dinosaurs in a Petri dish. Just stop. Just stop with it all.
Please stop.
A plastic degrading enzyme enhanced by amino acid changes designed by a machine learning algorithm can depolymerize polyethylene terephthalate or PET. I don't even want to pronounce it. They're trying to make it sound nice by calling it PET. At least twice as fast and at lower temperatures than the next best engineered enzyme. 6 years ago, scientists sifting through debris of a plastic bottle recycling plant discovered a bacterium that can degrade PET. Oh, I bet it just stands there and calls it names.
Yeah,
yeah.
It just berates it left and right, makes it feel little.
It's like, oh, look at you, plastic, aren't you pretty? I bet you had hair at one time. You were probably the prettiest girl at the ball, weren't you?
I'll make you my pet.
Yeah, see? The organism had two enzymes that hydrolyzed the polymer first into mono or 2-hydroxyethyl terephthalate. Yeah, I can't even pronounce it.
Words.
And then into ethylene glycol and terephthalic acid to use as an energy source. One enzyme in particular, petase, I can pronounce that because it's P-E-T-A-S-E. Petase.
That's like the rich part of that. Like you have pate, you have petase.
Right, yeah. has become the target of protein engineering efforts to make it stable at higher temperatures and boost its catalytic activity. A team around Herb Alpert is a trumpeter. I love his music. Hal Elper from the University of Texas at Austin in the U.S. has created a petase that can degrade 51 different pet products. No, not the stuff you bring home for your pet. We're talking about.
I was going to say,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. Including whole plastic containers and bottles. A neural network helped the team decide how to modify the protein scaffold. The algorithm was first trained on 19,000 proteins of similar size, though of very different functionalities. For each of petase's 290 amino acids, the program checked whether it fits well within its immediate structural environment compared with other proteins. An amino acid that isn't a good fit may be a source of instability, and the algorithm suggests a different amino acid in its place, Alper explains. Alper says that machine learning is becoming more and more powerful when it comes to identifying the effects of altering amino acids outside the active site. This means it can balance the evolutionary trade-off between activity and stability. Or in other words, give the machine the ideas, and it'll just come up with ways to dissolve you.
Because you know what? We're made out of protein and amino acids.
So it's going to dissolve us eventually. Out of the millions of possible combinations, a researcher zeroed in on 3 suggested amino acid substitutions, combined with 2 modifications for a previous petase engineering effort. They designed an enzyme that is highly, highly active, especially at lower temperatures, compared to anything else that's out there, Alper says. At 50 degrees Celsius, the enzyme that's almost twice as active in hydrolyzing a small sample of the pet food container than another engineered petase at 70 degrees Celsius. The enzyme even depolymerized an entire plastic cake tray within 48 hours.
Holy cow. A slow, painful death.
It is. And the team showed that it can make a new plastic item from the degraded waste. Oh, sure. Now they try to make it sound like it's useful.
Yeah. Now they're like, hey, look, we can do this too. You know what that is? That's the shiny object for us to focus on while the bad stuff's happening in the background.
Yeah. They're like, oh, no, AI can totally break down your body, but we can make a nice bowl out of it.
You know who else did that? Ed Gein. Ed Gein did that.
That's right. That's where they got the idea from. Ed Gein. Oh, we can make a nice soap and a leather belt out of you.
You don't need those nipples, do you, Tim?
No, not at all. Here, let's make Frisbees out of them. They claim that there are many other streams of plastic that are much harder to degrade because they're not polyesters. They're polyolefins. They're going after Norwegians now.
They're going at that. They're targeting them.
They're saying they're tougher than all the rest. The main thing is to curb the plastic stream at the front. So in other words, they're going after plastics and they're going after humans. So, you know, Congratulations. Try to protect yourself. This is the sad story of the AI part of our program today. And I think we'll still use this music right here.
Okay.
Yeah. Struck down with motor neuron disease, Dr. Peter Scott Morgan wanted to reinvent what it means to be human.
Okay.
Humans augmented with technological enhancements have been a staple of cyberpunk science fiction for years, but for robotics expert Dr. Peter Scott Morgan, making it impossible for people with physical disabilities to bypass their limitations through the science of cybernetics became a lifelong passion. Dr. Scott Morgan, who suffered from the same neurodegenerative disorder as Professor Stephen Hawking, developed and implemented a range of systems, including a lifelike avatar through which he could display emotion, a voice box that was equipped with recordings of his own voice, and eye-tracking technology through which he was able to control computers. As his body failed, these systems became an increasingly important lifeline and served as a primary way in which he was able to communicate and interact with the world. I wanted to reinvent for everyone what it meant to be trapped in your own body, he said. This isn't just about MND, it's about my disability, or it's about any disability, he said. Whether it's from accident, disease, genetics, or simply old age, even dementia, but ultimately, it's about everyone on Earth breaking free. I'm lucky enough to be a prototype and neo-human, an early experiment in how humanity can make a huge leap into our future. Well, Godspeed, Dr. Peter Scott Morgan. Eventually, you got away from the Terminator. That's all I got to say about that.
Good now, for him.
Now he's truly free.
Yeah?
He's truly free of AI.
He can move about willingly.
Amongst the angels.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's sad that he passed, but...
Yeah, I am too. I am too. I mean, God love him. He tried to do what he could for people with illnesses and injuries, and I'll probably need one of those exoskeletons myself in a few years.
See, I'm not against, like, I love that their whole motivation is to help humankind, like disabilities. We had the one story a while ago about feeling pain, and they're creating it for people, amputees and stuff. That's great. But they need to take an effect. There's people out there that will use this for evil.
they'll take over your little robot body and make you rob banks and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, they need fail safes in there.
For every great piece of technology that's meant to help man, there's somebody stupid and evil that will make you do despicable things.
Or there's a crazy teenager out there that'll dare another teenager to do something stupid with it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take a look at today's world and you'll see.
Oh, today's world is 100% messed up.
That's right.
The internet was created for something good, but look what happens to it. People use it for evil.
That's right. They do. They absolutely do. It's that time in the program, Bruiser, where we're going to visit the White House and talk a little bit about, some of the ghosts that are there. The main one we'll talk about is the ghost of Abraham Lincoln, who supposedly still haunts the White House.
I've heard this.
There are many ghosts that are said to have haunted the walls of the White House, but none have been more witnessed by the living than Abraham Lincoln. Ever since his death, Lincoln was supposedly haunting guests of the presidential residence. It's believed he does not do this with ill intent, but rather he comes back to the White House when the country is in need of his help, as he wants to finish what he was not able to do before his assassination. It seems as though Lincoln has some sort of premonition about his, or had some sort of premonition about his future assassination. Supposedly, shortly after Lincoln was first elected as president in 1860, he had a phantasmic encounter with himself.
Whoa. Doppelganger.
One day when he was looking at himself in a mirror in his Springfield, Illinois home, he saw two versions of his face in his reflection. The one face was his as it was that day, his real face. The other was a face which was a pale imitation of his real one. It was gaunt and cold and almost deathly. It had ghost-like elements that made the experience even more chilling. When his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln, was called upon to look, she did not see the double reflection that her husband was describing. Mary Todd was also a superstitious woman. She became concerned for her husband after she heard the account of what he saw, and made a creepy prediction of her husband's future. She believed that the two faces were a sign. For her, the real face indicated that he would live out his first term as president. The ghostly face was an indication that he would be reelected for a second term, but he would not live to complete it, which was scary accurate.
Yeah. And if you look at the photos of him through the years in office, you can just see his facial features change.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, that's crazy. I've seen, they do the time-lapse pictures of him, and you see how gaunt he gets. It's almost like he knew something was going to happen, you know?
Well, it's crazy how the office of the president changes the look of a president. I mean,
yeah, it does.
Yeah. The kind of stress that's put on the presidency is and on the president is crazy.
Yeah. Because it's a job crazy. Where no matter what you do, there's going to be people that don't like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
well, not just that, but there's something about the job itself that each president in their, I guess, in their demeanor and their demure do not come out and tell you what it is that's demanded of them. There's so many secrets they have to keep. There's so many state secrets they have to keep that they can't reveal to the general public. And even in post-presidential life, they don't reveal. They take it with them to the grave. And they're sworn to. That it just, it kind of eats them up.
Yeah. You know? It's stress that the human body's not ready for.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that he's still haunting the White House, you know, because normally people go back to where they're either most comfortable or where they have unfinished business.
Right.
And him being killed in the middle of his term, you know, he clearly had unfinished business.
True. Later on in an evening in early 1865, he dreamed of his death in extreme detail. He described, "I soon began to dream. There seemed to be a death-like stillness about me. Then I heard subdued sobs, as if a number of people were weeping. I thought I left my bed and wandered downstairs. I arrived at the East Room. Before me was a catafalque, I believe it is, on which rested a corpse wrapped in funeral vestments. Around it were stationed soldiers who were acting as guards. And there was a throng of people, some gazing mournfully upon the corpse, whose face was covered, others weeping pitifully. 'Who is dead in the White House?' I demanded of one of the soldiers. 'The president,' was his answer. 'He was killed by an assassin.' Abraham Lincoln was then shot in the head by John Wilkes Booth on April 14th, 1865. Lincoln then died the next day." It turns out that even Lincoln saw a ghost in the White House, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Who'd he see?
Let's find out here. So before his assassination, Lincoln had experienced his own White House ghost encounters. His son Willie had died from what was likely typhoid fever in 1862 at the age of 11. It absolutely devastated both the president and his wife. Willie's ghost supposedly paid many visits to his father at the White House, and Mary Todd had also experienced encounters with her deceased son. Following her son's death, Mary Todd stayed in her room and mourned his death for approximately a week, never leaving. She reported during that time she once saw her son standing at the foot of her bed. It's not the only person in the White House who had seen ghosts, or the only first family who had ever seen ghosts either, Bruiser. It turns out that Grace Coolidge, the first lady of President Calvin Coolidge, had seen a ghost there as well. She had seen first spotted Lincoln's ghost, as a matter of fact, and she was the first to say that she had spotted Lincoln's ghost. She claims that she saw the former president standing looking out of the window at the Oval Office. Supposedly his hands were held behind his back, and while he was standing there looking up past the Potomac, many say that he was looking out the window to watch over the former Civil War battlefields just beyond the river. Eleanor Roosevelt said she saw Lincoln, originally called the Blue Bedroom. Lincoln's study was renamed after numerous sightings of the ghosts were witnessed there. Eleanor Roosevelt was one of those to experience Lincoln's ghost there. She said that nearly every time she worked in the Lincoln bedroom, she would feel another presence in the room with her. She claimed she would, she could particularly notice a presence when she worked there late at night, and was convinced that Lincoln was joining her in his previous study. She often felt like he was peering over her shoulder. Now that's a little creepy.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
He's looking to see maybe she's doing the right thing or what.
Yeah.
Just creepy. Because he was a tall, tall man. He was like, what, 6'5", I think?
Yes. Yeah. He was, I think, 6'5", or 6'6", yeah.
Yeah. So he's an intimidating presence.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. Winston Churchill got a peek at President Lincoln, or was it the other way around? I believe this is the, isn't this the one where he was in the Lincoln bedroom bathroom, I believe. Winston Churchill visited the White House many times during President Franklin D. Roosevelt's time in office. And on one particular occasion, Eleanor had planned for him to stay in the Lincoln bedroom. He didn't like the bed, so he chose to sleep in the Rose Suite instead. However, he used the Lincoln bedroom's bathroom to wash up, and he met Lincoln's ghost in a less than decent manner. Churchill had come out of his evening bath wearing nothing but a cigar in his mouth. Godspeed, Commander. When he noticed the former president's ghost sitting in front of the room's fireplace, supposedly Churchill had spoken to the apparition saying, "Good evening, Mr. President." You seem to have me at a disadvantage. Legend.
And Lincoln responded with, "What's wrong in my room, dude? Like, why don't you want to stay in here? Like, you're obviously comfortable."
He said, "Obviously, and it's cold in here as well, is it?" Legend says Lincoln's ghost chuckled and then faded away.
Ah.
Obviously, he had a good sense of humor as well.
Yes.
Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands visited the White House and was greeted by the former president's ghost as well. She was sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom when she heard a knock at the door in the middle of the night, wondering if perhaps it was an important message. She went to go and see what it was. When she opened the door, she saw Lincoln's ghost standing in front of her, wearing his top hat and all. Shocked, she fainted on the spot. When she eventually came to, his ghost was gone.
Well, he was trying to be polite by knocking first.
Well, yeah, he was trying to let her know that he was there. Lady Bird Johnson had an encounter with President Lincoln. First Lady Lady Bird Johnson was watching a TV program covering the breath of covering the death of President Lincoln. Hard to say in one sentence. When she had her phantasmic experience while watching the program, a plaque on the wall caught her eye. She had never noticed this plaque before, and she went to investigate it. When she read it, it described Lincoln's time in the room, and she very quickly felt a wave of coldness and uneasiness wash over her. So there you go. Those are the people who had experiences with Abraham Lincoln.
Those are some high-profile people, too.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Pretty credible people.
Yeah, exactly.
Good old Abe making sure everything's okay in the White House.
Yeah, most definitely. And that interesting in that, you know, old Abe had his time in there and then some.
And it sounds like he's a very polite ghost, too. So.
Yeah. Well, he was honest with a sense of humor. Yeah. And with a sense of humor. Exactly. With a sense of humor. Well, speaking of paranormal experiences, Bruiser, there's a new psychological research paper out there that says that paranormal experiences are the norm and not the exception.
Okay.
So what you experienced over the weekend,
yeah,
in that hotel, what people were experiencing with President Lincoln are the norm, not the exception. A new study published in Spirituality and Clinical Practice explains that an individual experiencing hauntings and ghostly experiences may have haunted people syndrome.
It's a syndrome now, huh?
I guess so. It's
how did we catch this syndrome?
I don't know. It says haunting. Oh, I have it turned down. Haunting
phenomena
are complex, intertwined
phenomena
involving personality, ideology, culture, and previous experience towards making sense of an event or a series of events deemed haunting. Does that sentence seem confusing to you?
That is very confusing. It's a smart way of saying something. It's like they're trying to say something, but they're not saying anything at all.
Yeah, that's according to psychologist Brian Laith. Collaborators Jim Hurin and Brian Laith, along with other colleagues, recently finished a 5-year research program, which culminated in 20 peer-reviewed research papers in their recent book, Ghosted. Their primary goal was to use research to build a better understanding of hauntings and related paranormal
phenomena.
Haunted people syndrome was one of the primary theories built out of this research. Laith and Hurin proposed 4 core features of haunted people syndrome, namely the meaning-making or narrative created around haunting experiences is influenced by personal backgrounds, beliefs, and personality characteristics. 2, anxiety and distress regarding hauntings are a function of the nature, closeness, and spontaneity of anomalous experiences. Got that so far?
Okay.
Yep.
Checklist 1, checklist 2, gotcha.
3, distress and unease make anomalous experiences more likely to occur.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So we can actually put ourselves in that situation by ghost hunting. We create that distress and unease.
Ah, okay. We're creating it by doing the hunt,
yep.
The investigation. Okay.
And 4, anomalous experiences tend to be contagious, i.e. anomalous experiences can spread to others.
That I don't believe, because You and I have both been in rooms where we've experienced something, but somebody else hasn't experienced it.
Okay, but by sitting here and talking about it, can't we spread the idea of that experience to others and then they have that experience? That's the way I take that.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you put it that way, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's the way I take that sentence. According to researchers, many of the reports of hauntings and the people involved in them can be understood by treating the events as symptoms, they say. Just like symptoms of the flu, the severity of the diagnosis is a function of the degree and rarity of symptoms and their length, explains Laith. Another important predictor of anomalous experiences is transliminality. As a concept, transliminality refers to the boundary between the conscious self and the non-conscious self, as well as the outside environment. In parapsychology research, it has been associated with extrasensory perception, out-of-body experiences, and visionary-like experiences in general. When trying to understand the factors that prime an individual for a haunting experience, the researchers found that hauntings were almost always a mixture of the right person with the right environment. The researchers also draw attention to the pressing need to recognize and treat ghostly or paranormal experiences as real. Laith points out that ghostly episodes, shamanic experiences, and general high strangeness have been well documented throughout history. Furthermore, over 100 years of modern empirical psychology show that they are not going away despite changes in society's zeitgeist. I haven't said zeitgeist in so many years.
Such a cool word.
It is. Therefore, the people who experience them should take the experiences seriously and should not be, and should be taken seriously, they say. As the haunted people syndrome model suggests, the nature of such experiences can be shocking and sometimes anxiety provoking to the individual. Any denial of such experiences is not beneficial to an individual's well-being. And I think that's why when we read people's stories or we feature people's stories, we don't dismiss them.
Correct.
Because we do take people's stories very seriously.
Yes, we do.
Clinical professionals certainly do not tell people with anxiety or depression that their experiences are not real or valid, highlights... that story bounced on me. Highlights Laith. At the very least, haunted people syndrome is a valid cross-cultural, commonly experienced phenomena and should be treated as such. For anyone who experienced a haunting and might be struggling to come to terms with it, Laith has the following advice, and it's this. In these sort of experiences, knowing that your experience is actually not uncommon and has some predictable components is often helpful. According to Laith, whether people choose to interpret anomalous experiences as paranormal or not, they do not have to feel alone or crazy for having gone through them due to the following reasons. One, having just one paranormal experience is extremely unlikely. That's interesting.
That is, yeah.
According to previous research, long histories of a variety of subtle and sometimes overt paranormal experiences are common.
Okay.
So chances are, if you've had one, you're going to have another.
Yep.
Okay.
It's not just a one-time thing.
That's right. And two, anomalous phenomena tend to be both subjective and objective. The internal aspect of the experience included sensed presences or somatic touches or marks, whereas external aspects include objects moving or apparitions caught by technology.
Okay.
So chances are it's been not only a subjective but objective haunting you've had. Chances are not only have you had something happen to you, but it's been caught by technology as well.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I like that he says, too, to discuss it. Just like with anxiety, depression, discuss it, talk about it. Because so many people, there's that aura of not talking about paranormal experiences. You don't want to be embarrassed by it. Mm-hmm. No, talk about it. Get it out there. You're not the only one. This article just proves that. You're not the only one.
Right. Wrapping it up, obviously, this is the most controversial characteristic of haunted people syndrome, but we note that our model remains predictive, regardless of the reader's personal preference for mainstream or paranormal explanations, clarifies Laith. In the future, the researchers hope to start exploring transliminality in the context of religious and ritual practitioners who regularly and purposely invoke these type of phenomena. So there you go.
That's a great article.
Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Now we all have a syndrome.
Now we all have a syndrome, that's for sure.
But he's right. Talk about it. If you have something happen to you, say something. You don't know the reaction you're going to get.
That's true. Very true. Moving on, Bruiser. In early modern Russia, the majority of accused witches were men.
Really?
Yeah. There were such thing as female witches.
I thought they were witches or women, warlocks or men. Isn't that the way it was?
Well, that's here in the West, I guess. But Orthodox Russians deployed magic for practical purposes, like inflicting illness, harming business competitors, and attracting lovers. The word witches makes many Americans think of women working in league with the devil, but women haven't always been the face of sorcery. Most of Catholic and Protestant Europe embrace the idea of magic as a satanic craft practiced by women, and strong independent women were kept in line through such accusations. Orthodox Russia, however, accusers overwhelmingly blame men for bewitching them, and they held different ideas where the power of magic actually came from. Evidence about Russians' beliefs in witchcraft survives in all kinds of documents from the 12th to 18th centuries, sermons, historical chronicles and tales, stories of saints' lives, laws and decrees, manuals of herbal healing and spell books, and court records. These documents provide insights into the lives of ordinary people otherwise lost to history, in peasant homes and military regimes, on serf-owning estates, and on barges on the Volga River. Verbatim testimonies and trial records show fraught, often abusive relationships between husbands and wives, masters and servants, and patrons and clients. This history, the focus of three of the books that the author of this article has written, as a scholar of medieval and early modern Russia, shakes up understandings of who witches were. Here, men were the usual suspects of reasons that highlight the frightening, capricious ways power and hierarchy structured everyday life. 3 out of 4 Russians, Bruiser, were accused of witchcraft, and they were men.
Wow.
Yeah, most were accused of acting alone or with 1 or 2 associates, and almost all faced charges for everyday practical kinds of magic.
So they did charge them and put them through trial and stuff, kind of like we did here.
Yep.
Okay.
Whereas trials in Western Europe involved lurid visions of satanic witchcraft, Black Sabbaths where naked witches flew on brooms to cannibalistic feasts and diabolical orgies, Russian witches were thought to deploy magic towards more immediate worldly ends, such as healing wounds or hurting a competitor's business. Witches employed spells and simple notions made mainly of herbs and roots, throwing in the occasional eagle's wing, eye torn from a live chicken, or dirt from a grave. Their magic called on the forces of nature and the beauty of poetic diction. They drew on the force of analogy, as this, so that, to activate their spells and curses. For example, as a log burns and withers in the fire, so may my master's heart burn and wither. Nice, huh?
Ouch! Brings a whole new meaning to heartburn.
Yeah. Some spells invoked supernatural beings, from Jesus Christ and Mary to nature spirits and mythic creatures from Russian legends, such as a golden fish or a wingless bird. Occasionally, spells called on Satan and his many little Satans, or invoked, kids.
Yeah. Some little Satans.
Satans, or invoked saints and Satans at once. So you got the whole crew involved.
You're just bringing everybody from the Bible in.
That's right. While some of the accusations were clearly false, lodged out of malice, surviving records make it equally clear that many of the accused did enact the kinds of rituals and spells that their accusers claimed. Practitioners used their craft in efforts to heal the sick, help the lovelorn, locate lost people and objects, protect people from guns and arrows, and guard livestock. At the same time, records show some practitioners had darker motives: to curse, inflict illnesses, possess others, cause impotence, extinguish love, or kill. In a society without trained medical providers, folk healing offered the only option for the sick other than prayer. Many people consulted both priests and healers who used magic. They saw no contradiction between the two. Fear that witches had a tendency to bewitch newlyweds made it common to invite sorcerers to protect the bride and the groom during weddings and to pay them well in vodka for their service. That's one way to get paid.
Yep, we'll work for vodka.
Yep. Everyone from the czar's wife to the lowly serf might turn to magic at some juncture in their lives. Perhaps most revealing, are what was usually called love spells, which by their very nature were coercive, intended to subordinate the will of their target to that of the spellcaster. Love spells used by men were usually sex spells. Surviving examples. Well, yeah, of course. What else are we casting out there?
We're dirty pigs.
That's right. Surviving examples are both beautiful and terrifying, with the spellcaster wishing agony on his beloved whenever she is away from him. Are you ready for this one?
Oh, no.
There's one actually written out here. You ready?
I'm ready.
It says, as the fire burns for a year and a half, a year and a day and half a day, and an hour and a half an hour, so may that woman burn for me, with her white body, her ardent heart, her black liver, her stormy head and brains, her clear eyes, black brows, and sugary lips. She sounds diabetic.
She sounds like she's really sick with a black liver.
Yeah, I'll say. Too much vodka. Yeah. May she suffer as much misery and bitterness as a fish without water. May that woman suffer as much bitterness for me for a day and half a day, for an hour and half an hour, for a year and half a year, for all the years, and thus let it be.
Wow.
Damn, that guy's bitter.
That guy is mad at women.
Well, you know what? I don't think that necessarily makes her want you, does it? I mean, that's pretty much one of those, and pardon my French here, ladies, that's kind of one of those, get that bitch over here and make her serve me.
It is. It 100% is. Like, he's not looking for a wife or a lover. He's looking for a servant.
Yeah, exactly. It says here, in the minority of the cases where women were accused of witchcraft, their love spells usually aim to calm their husband's anger, avert their fists, and make them be kind.
You know what else does that, ladies? Don't give them vodka.
Exactly. Keep the goddamn vodka away from them. When a woman attempted to turn the tables and dominate her husband or master, little S&M. Little whippy whippy, guess who's now a puppy. however, that threatened to invert the patriarchal societal order, and hence punishment was especially harsh, including some executions.
Oh, no.
So in order to get them to act right, they would punish the ladies by execution. What? Okay, this is effed up.
Well, this is completely misogynistic.
I guess.
Like, you can tell it's a very manly run organization when they're doing that. Like, oh, you're not gonna do my dishes, make my sandwich, and put out? Fine, to the guillotine for her.
Jeez. So. Essentially, while women were often stuck at home or on estates, men of all ranks, even serfs, were relatively mobile during their outings and might run up against the arbitrary authority of a master, a judge, an official, a military officer, a nobleman, or a bishop. In any of these situations, being armed with a protective written spell was simply good planning, they said.
I have this piece of paper that's going to protect me from everything.
Yeah, their protection spell is just weird. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, of course I do.
Okay.
If it's talking about a very sickly woman again.
This one I think is a little bit more tame.
Yeah, it's going to be off the wall.
Yeah. It says, like the sun rises and the moon by the will of the highest, and like czars and princes and kings and generals and governors and all the people, so may I, slave of God, appear with the beauty of the sun and the moon in their eyes, as czars and kings and knights and governors and generals and rulers love any precious stone, and may all people love me, slave of God. How's that for a spell?
That the slave of God, huh? They're going that route.
So essentially, these are the men were the ones who were mainly casting the spells. And since belief in magic was universal, elites and common folk alike saw its possibilities in danger. Magic threatened to arm its underling and subvert the accepted social order. Although women participated in the practices, it was men who were more likely to bump up against authorities and come under suspicion and be discovered with a scrap of paper with a spell to power tucked into a hat or shoe, and got punished as such.
Well, yeah, because that spell essentially questions their authority, and you don't question authority in Russia.
That's right. You got it there. We got two more stories here on Supernatural News, and these are kind of wacky stories.
Okay.
All right.
I like wacky.
They're a little wacky. Now, we've heard before about custom coffins for when you kick the mortal coil.
Yep.
Some of them are kind of cool. They're kind of custom made. Like, you know, you've got like the Kiss coffins.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For fans of Kiss. Although I hear now the coffins all actually lip sync to backing tracks. So you have that.
And I heard you have to get buried every year over and over and over again because it's, you know, the retirement tour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get buried initially. They dig you back up. You take a tour. You get buried again.
Yep.
You've got other coffins, that custom coffins that can be made. The one I like the most is the one that's got the bell on the outside in case you were buried alive. That's the one I'm looking forward to because that's my greatest fear.
There's one that I read about. A man had a child's like a recorder, mm-hmm. so that it sounded like a child was crying for help. So when you walked past his grave, you heard a child crying
no.
for help.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yep. That would be creepy.
Yep, that was in his thing. So they put it in the coffin so that when you walk past, out of the headstone would come a child crying for help. And they tried to prosecute his wife for something, and they couldn't because there's no law against it.
Oh, that's bizarre and creepy. There's now a Japanese company that's making custom coffins for vampire fans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So does that mean that it comes with a stake and a cross, or...?
I don't think it's made to disturb vampires in that way.
It's supposed to house vampires. So yes, what, has it got yeah. Bluetooth?
Yes, Bluetooth. Exactly, Bluetooth for your favorite vampire tunes like Monster Mash and all that other stuff.
Well, I was thinking you could Bluetooth in on like a little iPad or something, watch some Lost Boys or
oh, yeah,
Once that. Bitten.
Yeah. What's the one with George Hamilton? Why does George Hamilton keep coming up with you and I?
He's coming up in our podcast, dude.
Yeah, Love at First Bite. That's what it was, wasn't it?
There it is. Yep, yeah. Yep.
Somebody wrote me about George Hamilton. I'm trying to remember what it was, but...
That's because we wanted like a 20-minute thing about him.
Yeah, yeah, I did.
He's the tannest vampire we know.
I did get an email about George Hamilton. Ziggy Vamp Company Limited, a Tokyo-based company that specializes in products for wannabe vampires, is selling handmade customizable coffin furniture. If you've ever dreamed of owning your own sleeping coffin, you're in luck.
No.
Yep.
I'm so claustrophobic.
Oh, I know, right? For just 429,000 yen, or yes, only $3,200, you can now order the essential vampire bed and feel like a true bloodsucker. And we know what you're thinking here. $3,200 isn't cheap. Well, for a bed, it actually is.
Yeah, that is.
If you've seen some of the, yeah, you've seen some of the sets out there lately. That's
how are you going to get freaking a coffin? Like, it's only meant for one person.
Well, Bruiser, there's ways. But this isn't some generic casket that you're spending your money on. Not only is it handmade from actual wood by carpenters at established woodworking and upholstery companies, Yushin Kensho, and I believe this is Denichi, but they are highly customizable and have multiple uses. Oh, look at this, Bruiser.
Multiple uses. A little
freaky,
okay.
Freaky in the coffin. There's nothing wrong with getting a vampire coffin bed, but if you ever get tired of it, you can simply use it as something else. As Ziggy Vamp demonstrates in a series of promotional images, the coffin could be used as a couch, as a dining table, or as an extra storage space.
That'd be creepy to have as a dining table, though.
Yeah.
I have to admit. You're eating on someone's coffin.
Yeah. You can order the bed in various colors, from classic black to pink, and opt for a variety of metallic accessories like handles and crosses, and choose the type and color of upholstery from velour or satin.
Ooh, velour would be nice.
Yeah. The vampire coffins come in two sizes, a standard 187-centimeter long option or a 197-centimeter standard plus. Prices vary, but they start at $3,200. According to At Press, Ziggy Vamp initiated a crowdfunding campaign for the vampire coffin bed in 2020 and realized that there was too much demand for this kind of unusual furniture, so they set up a production line.
Good for them. Yeah. I can't wait to be watching Shark Tank to see these guys come out.
Exactly. Now anyone can sleep like a vampire. You too. can do it. I wonder if they're on Wayfair yet.
Or Etsy.
Yeah. Yeah. One or the other.
Like I said, I can't wait to be watching Shark Tank and they come on. They're trying to pitch the sharks why you should sleep like a vampire.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Okay. This next story is just plain bizarre. I can just see this guy going through a bad area of town and getting his ass beat. I mean,
you could just tell, huh?
Literally just getting his ass beat, then getting his feet thrown over a telephone wire. Yeah. Are you ready for this?
Yeah. Like, I was expecting to say his shoes, but his feet.
Well, that's why. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
This is the most bizarre story of the day. A man has his favorite pair of sneakers permanently tattooed on his feet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's too damn cheap to keep buying shoes.
Yeah, but still, take a picture. Last long. Well, actually, it doesn't because a tattoo will last your whole life.
That's right. Tired of always buying new pairs of gym sneakers? Well, a UK man has his favorite pair of Nikes permanently tattooed on his feet.
Okay, so can he go into places that require shoes?
No. No,
that's not technically shoes, right?
Mm-mm.
He's still barefoot.
Yep. Dean Gunther, a popular tattoo artist from Manchester in the United Kingdom, recently went viral on Instagram and TikTok after sharing a short video of himself tattooing a pair of sneakers on a client's feet. Although drawn exclusively by hand, seen from a certain angle, the design really does create the illusion that the person is wearing a pair of Vibram five-finger sneakers with built-in toe slots. The man apparently prefers Nikes, but they don't make that design. So he's tired.
He created his own.
He's tired of paying for shoes, so he decided he will get his favorite pair of Nikes tattooed on him, and he can see the funny side to it, Dean Gunther told NeedToKnow.online. Definitely a great conversation starter. His wife loves it, too.
And his wife's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Gunther said that the hardest part was drawing the sneakers by hand, and using a stencil was out of the question. He viewed a 360 rendition of the sneakers and then spent a couple of hours freehanding the design onto his client's feet. The tattooing took another 8 hours to complete.
I believe that, with that much detail.
God damn.
That had to hurt, though, because I know, obviously, having lots of tattoos myself. Mrs. Bruiser has stars on her. She said she has lots of tattoos too. And she said that was the worst one.
Oh yeah. The feet are the most sensitive.
Yeah.
That's just gotta be torture.
Yeah.
Drawing the tattoo on my free hand was the most challenging part. I had to make sure everything flows with the contours of the body, Gunther said. I wanted to create the illusion that the person is wearing shoes, even though he's barefoot. It will definitely make you think twice, or make you look twice, rather. Interestingly, this is the second bizarre tattoo that Gunther has done recently. Only a couple of weeks ago, we covered the hyper-realistic six-pack abs tattoo that he did for a client who allegedly didn't want to waste time at the gym anymore. I will show you a picture here in a second, Bruiser. You're not going to believe this. For more unusual yet... Oh, okay. That's just a promo for more unusual tattoos. Okay, so I'm going to show you...
I met a guy at an underwater needlepoint show in Milwaukee that has the... It's called the Winged Title Belt, and that's the belt Hulk Hogan's most famous for.
Yep.
He has it tattooed on his stomach, and it's a full belt. It goes all the way around his body.
No. Really?
Yeah. It's amazing. I wouldn't personally do it, but the detail in this belt is amazing.
That had to hurt like hell.
Oh, yeah. He said it did. He said it hurt most around his belly button.
So let me see here. I don't think this picture will stay steady, but because there's all kinds of pop-up ads happening here. But let me see here. Here we go. This is what this looks like.
Oh, those are real. But so his toes are sticking out. So it just looks like he's wearing small shoes.
Right, but it's supposed to be like the
That's right. The toes.
The toe slip. Part of the, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, but now the thing is if the guy wants to walk barefoot anywhere, you know, he's going to get yelled at if he goes to one of those trampoline parks.
That's what I said. He goes walking in a bad part of town. Someone's going to beat him for his shoes and cut off his ankles and throw him over a telephone wire.
What's that song, Pumped Up Kicks? You better run faster than the bullet. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what he's going to get.
Run from my gun.
At least, you know, he was smart and didn't make them Jordans, though, because that's what people get shot for.
That's Jordans. Right. That's right. Then they try and peel him off him and go, oh, shit, it's just a tattoo.
They just remove his feet then.
That's right. That's right. So, Bruiser, tell us what you got planned, what you got coming up in the world of underwater needlepoint or wrestling, folks. Wrestling. We can say it now because seems to be every paranormal show now is crossing over with wrestling. Seems to me, Bruiser, we were the leaders in this deal.
Yes, we were. Yeah. We were pioneers, Tim.
We're pioneers.
But Sunday, I am in Winston-Salem, North Carolina for AML Wrestling. I'm very excited. It's my debut. Mm-hmm. I'm booked with them for the end of the year, and they're one of the top companies in North Carolina, so I'm really excited about that. And then on June 30th, which is a Thursday, I'm performing at the ECW Arena.
Yeah.
From Monster Factory, and it's being recorded for I don't know what, but some sort of TV show. I don't know if it's a Netflix, Apple, what. I don't know yet. I will let you know when I find out.
Cool.
But I'm very excited because ECW Arena is one of my favorite arenas to perform in. And the Philadelphia crowd, they are great to perform in front of.
Yeah, they are.
And I get some Tony Lukes.
Oh, Tony Lukes. And, of course, our brother Blue Meanie's going to be there as well.
He will be. I'm very excited to see him. I'm good friends with him. I told you the other day on Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, one of my highlights of my career is doing the Meanie Dance with Meanie in the ring. So, and he's such a good brother. He's such a good guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. He's he's been on the show with us here before, I've always had such a great time with Blue Meanie, just hanging out with Blue Meanie, and man, he's such a good guy. Such a good guy, and has a love of the paranormal like you wouldn't believe. He loves
Mandy Leon's on the show too. No, speaking of love of the paranormal. Yep. Really? I'm going to actually ask her to see when she's available to come speak with us.
Please do. Please do. We'd love to have Mandy on the show and chop it up with her as well. So that would, yeah. Yeah.
She can answer questions about Santeria like none other.
Yeah.
We got to. She was raised around it.
We got to get her on the show and talk Santeria sometime. So
exactly. Yeah. Yep.
We got to do that. Yeah, in fact, we got some surprises coming up in the next few weeks. We've got some good stuff coming up in the next few weeks here on Darkness Radio. Can't wait to roll it out here for you folks as we're here installed now on our new home turf of Audio Boom. You know, I have something now to tell you guys. I thought that we weren't available on the Stitcher app. We are available on the Stitcher app. It's just a lot of folks who were on the paid premium feed can't find us, but if you go to the regular feed, the commercial feed, you can get us still on the Stitcher app. So you can still listen to us on the Stitcher app. Otherwise, you're listening to us obviously on however you listen to us regularly, whether it be on iHeartRadio, on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. However you're listening to us, you're listening to us. Nothing changed. See? You've come out unscathed. You've come through
it was an easy transition.
Yeah, it was. Easy peasy. And see? Nothing hurt on your way out? Anything like that? The changes that we made were just minute. In fact, we gave you a little something free at the end of True Crime Tuesday, and that is we gave you Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals. Absolutely free. That's our inflation buster for you. You know, I mean, everything costs so much these days. And
it does.
And so
it's too much nowadays.
Rather than have a premium channel, we just decided, you know what? Cruiser and Bruiser are giving you a little bit something for free. We're going to give you Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals.
And there's a lot of them out there. So
there are. So now True Crime Tuesday is rolled into the Darkness Radio feed. So there's not a True Crime Tuesday feed to go looking for, especially if you were on Stitcher Premium previously. And don't go looking for the premium feed anymore for Stitcher. It doesn't exist. We're on Audio Boom now. So there's nothing to look for. There's no premium Stitcher premium feed. It's all Audio Boom now. And so you can, if you so feel, I mean, if you're still enjoying Stitcher Premium's product, don't cancel.
Right.
But if you feel like that's something that you want to cancel, you can go ahead and do so. And save yourself $5 because we've now made Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals part of True Crime Tuesday, and that will air on the Darkness Radio feed on Tuesdays. So we just rolled it into Darkness Radio. So there's that. And then, like I've told Bruiser before, and I've told you guys on the air, we're going to do what we call that there physical NFT. You're going to end up owning a once in a lifetime Darkness Radio. Either it's either going to be an item or a package. So we're going to do a giveaway here relatively shortly. I'm putting it together as we speak right now. We're going to do a drawing for a once in a lifetime Darkness Radio product.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like even you and I won't have
it. No, even Bruiser and I won't have it. Mally won't have it. Jess won't have it. But it's just a way of us saying thank you so that you have a once in a lifetime Darkness Radio thing. Nobody else in the world has it. But it's just our way of saying thanks, and thank you for tuning in to Darkness Radio and being such a great listener of Darkness Radio. Tomorrow on the show, Bruiser, we've got From Portals to Hell on Discovery Plus and the Travel Channel, Katrina Weidman is joining us.
I am so excited for that. When you said, when you made the announcement in Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals the other day, you saw me, I almost got giddy.
I am giddy.
She is amazing investigator, and from what you say, an amazing person. So I can't wait to hear her again.
She's coming in, and she's going to blow the doors off this joint. She's going to talk about not only Portals to Hell, but also her YouTube show with Heather Taddy. We're going to talk a little bit about investigating what it's like to be on the road and filming the show, and some of the cases that they've done already this year. There are three episodes left of Portals to Hell. They get released, I believe, on Saturdays.
Yep.
So there are three episodes left of Portals to Hell. We'll talk. We'll do a little preview of what's to come. We'll talk a little bit of what's happened so far this season, and then we'll talk about the YouTube show with Heather Taddy. So we've got a lot to talk about with Katrina Weidman tomorrow.
And give her a big hello from me, please, because I am a huge fan of hers.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, most definitely. I'll definitely say hi from Beer City Bruiser. So that will be tomorrow right here on Darkness Radio. So we've had a good week this week. We've got a great week coming up next week. And again, I want to thank you guys so much for continuing to tune in here to Darkness Radio to show your support. We love all you guys. We love the fact that you keep, you know, sending us emails, telling us how much you enjoy us, that you're rating and reviewing us, and telling us how much you love the new cast and the new direction, which is really the old direction of the show. Nothing's really changed, but everything old is new again. And the fact that, you know, you love the energy we're bringing to the show, and you love the fact that we're kind of bringing the fire to the show. We love the fact that you guys are interacting with us and that you're happy with what we're doing. We're happy that you're there with us. So continue to support us. We want to continue to, you know, just give you everything we have and great, great entertainment throughout the week. And again, tomorrow we've got Katrina Weidman for you. We're looking forward to entertaining you. Please stay with us and continue to rate, review our program, and continue to send us those stories. Parashare, supernatural Parashare stories, tim@darknessradio.com. Want to see those stories because we want to share them with you here on Wednesdays. Please send those stories in for us. For Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Join us tomorrow, Katrina Weidman, here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.